do you want to be elite?
Because we hard encryption like a knife cuts through butter.
The number one hacker in the world. Sex.
Oh, God. Shit, we got it too.
The most dangerous hacker in America.
International Unix environments.
The security criteria.
DOT. The logic bomb.
Got the IBM PC.
I use the password scanner.
NSA trusted networks.
You got to do a righteous hack.
Could be.
Entertainment Radio.
episode 12 of Games More Entertainment Radio. This is C4 and...
To Stank Dog.
In the hizzy. And we're bringing you this episode in the face of E3. We're not going to be talking about all the new games that they've got out there with all their flash and pretty graphics and whatnot. We're talking about the old school games, back when games were games, and about the gameplay, and not about flash and graphics.
Not that there's necessarily anything wrong with flash and graphics, but if they're the driving force of the game, you know, that really should be secondary, and you can have a great game that doesn't have all kinds of fancy graphics and requires video cards and accelerators and stuff like that.
$400 video cards and all that garbage. It definitely takes away from some of the games, though, when the developers are focusing on the flash and the graphics over the gameplay. And, you know, we're seeing way too much of that these days. And just before we get into that, though, I want to point out we do have our FTP up now, the archive server from Bob Nino. I just gotta make sure that everybody's aware that you can get the older episodes. The address, it's an FTP, the address is gameradio.gotdns.com, and the login and the password is gamer for both of them. That's really cool, he totally hooked us up on that. It's a fast pipe. I uploaded the episodes to it, the past episodes, and they're all up there for you now. Let's talk a little bit about our history with games, first of all. I'll lead off. I remember I got into games when I was about 5 years old. I had an Atari 2600 at that time. I played a lot of old classics, you know, and they're not that old, but by my standards, you know, I was 5 years old trying to get used to this new video machine we had, playing Pitfall and stuff like that, and I wasn't too serious into it. About a year later, though, we got a Sega Master System. This was the old 8-bit console from Sega, and that is when the gaming spirit just grew inside me, and I've been hooked ever since.
You know, I honestly cannot remember if I started playing games on computers before I started playing games on the Atari 2600. I'm pretty sure the computer came first for me. I actually remember, I guess it was probably, I wasn't as young as 5, that's for sure. I was probably started playing games, I remember it was actually in school, and it was probably 4th or 5th grade, so I guess that would make me around 10, 11, somewhere around there.
And what games did you play back then?
Oh, geez, our school had...
You had punch card games, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, the games we used to play were hopscotch, and Foursquare. Red Rover. So that was back before the computer came out when I was your age. Oh, man, now you're making me feel old. I remember, like I said, I remember in school the first game I played was on an Apple II. There was no Macintosh, was not even a thought back then. It was an Apple II, and they were very prominent in schools and in education because they really geared and tried to sell. Their whole strategy was if they broke into education and get kids using computers in the school and using this, you know, that Apple computer, they were hoping that that would be the computer that the parents would want to buy their kids at home, and they were hoping to start, you know, by breaking into that and having them sold at home. So I remember distinctly that we had an Apple II, and there was a game on there, completely text-based. I mean, we said something earlier about flash and having, you know, fancy graphics. There were no graphics. This was a green screen and completely text-based. And you basically, it's kind of hard to describe, actually. If anybody's familiar with a MUD or a MUSH, the multi-user dungeons where you go with that you can play over the Internet or over any kind of network, actually. But everything is typing in commands. You basically play a role of a character. I mean, it is true role-playing. And you basically were on, the Millennium Falcon. You started off as a character on the Millennium Falcon, and you would actually, by typing in commands, you know, go here and move there and shoot and just all kinds of different text commands that would make you live out this Star Wars adventure. And it was great because everybody loves Star Wars.
And it really forces you to use your imagination, too, when there's no graphics there to do it all for you.
Right. I mean, you actually had to use your brain to immerse yourself in the game instead of having the graphics and flash and everything. I guess it could probably be debated on whether that actually takes away from takes away from the fun of the game by putting too much graphics or too much flash and stuff in there, or overkill. You don't use your imagination as much. You don't use your, you know, your wits and your thinking through the game, because it's pretty much all laid out for you. It's just press the up arrow and hold down the fire button, you know?
And a part of me wonders if the fact that we've got games today that are, you know, so intense graphically, that because of the little flaws and the little details that are missing, you do notice them. You know, I mean, your brain really picks up on the fact that, you know, that the guy's ear is a texture and it's flat on the side of his head, not sticking out like a real ear.
Right, and that, you know, these new graphics cards are just pushing more and more polygons each day, but they still haven't come up with a way to play, you know, full, realistic, real-looking characters in the game engine itself. You know, I'm sure people can probably email and say, oh, but what about this and what about that? But, frankly, I haven't seen it. I mean, think of, let's say, Lord of the Rings, for example, the second movie where you had Gollum as a character. He was believable. He looked real. He looked like he was right there in the movie. They don't have that kind of quality, movie-quality graphics on video games yet. So, yeah, it takes away from a lot of it when you have to look at these blockiness that they're trying real hard, but they just haven't made it real, real natural. They're spending so much time trying to work the graphics and hack the graphics around to make them work that they're paying less and less attention to the gameplay, unfortunately. Like I said, that Star Wars game was great. You could play Star Wars characters, and you could be right in the cockpit with Chewbacca and moving around and attacking the stormtroopers and stuff like that. And the gameplay made the game fun, and there wasn't the tiniest bit of graphics in the entire game, and it was great.
I have very little experience with text-only games. I played, my main experience with those is BBS door games. Did you ever play any of those?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of like that. The door games were also, there were many different flavors of those also, but, yeah, it was along the same lines, except that the doors would give you a little bit more interaction with others. And you know, these games like the Star Wars I was talking about, a couple others were Adventure. That was a very simple name. It wasn't like a genre of games. There was a game called Adventure or Zork. And, you know, these are famous names that, you know, when I was young, I couldn't wait till these games, Zork 2 would come out. And it was all text-based. They made the phrase open mailbox a household name. You would be talking about that game. Well, how do you do this? Oh, you have to open mailbox. You have to type in read mail. You have to do all these little things, but your imagination brought you into the game. And it wasn't like you were, not only were you playing a game, but you were reading a book. And you were living a book, and you were being interactive in this whole world because you were using your imagination.
Some of those BBS door games, it was great that we did have, you know, interaction with other people. I think I talked about it on another show, too. There was one that, do you remember Legend of the Red Dragon, Lord?
It sounds very familiar, yeah.
It sounds just like, see, I haven't played any so far the games that you've mentioned. But it reminds me of just that right there. You were this one character who ran around in this total virtual world with nothing but text, and, you know, you just went from location to location and killed the occasional monster and stuff. And I tell you what, it was the best time of my life. It was the best games I've ever played. When I woke up that next morning, you know, I had such a vivid picture in my head of the crazy shit that I really didn't do last night that I never get with, you know, these games that are so graphically intensive. You know, it's just like I sit down, I shoot a bunch of people, or I go save the world or whatever, and that's it. I saw it. It was all laid out in front of me with the graphics already. There was not a whole lot of imagination left to it, and it seems like I have to try a little bit harder to get into the games now as I did back then. They just sucked me in back then.
Yeah, and there are still good games now. Don't get me wrong. I don't think either one of us is trying to say that, but the point being that the gameplay was always emphasized in these games because you didn't have the crutch, and I'm sorry, that's what it is sometimes for graphics, a crutch to make your game better. Oh, well, the game kind of sucks, but it's got that real pretty engine, and we can make water effects that are great. That doesn't make a good game, and sometimes people use the graphics as a crutch. The door games, even, you know, what I used to play on the BBS more than anything was a simple trivia game. And you would play in with trivia with other people, and whoever got it the fastest would get points, and you'd take turns, you know, passing questions back and forth. And, you know, that's pretty simple and pretty silly by today's standards, but, you know, what is it, Who Wants to Make a Millionaire, whatever that show is, they make millions of dollars on that same exact concept.
You're right. I'm not obviously not saying there's not any good games here, but you're 100% right where it's a crutch for a lot of today's games. I mean, in fact, most of the games that come to mind that I've seen come out recently are exactly, they suffer from that exact problem right there. It's they advertise the game, they've got these screenshots, and they say, look how fantastic our game is, and then you play it and there's nothing there. But, you know, a game that pushes your machine as hard as it will go, and sometimes I even end up going out and buying new hardware for it just to play a game that I can't even get into because they focus too much on the graphics.
Right. And, you know, these games, they're still available. You can either still find these just scattered all over the Internet. Most of these games are abandonware, which you can probably explain it better than I can, the concept of abandonware. But you can find these out there, and you can just get an old Pentium 100. For God's sake, you can put it on a 2 or 386 if you even have one laying around. But if you've got an old computer that's like you're just about to retire, you won't play any new games, you can't put any good operating systems that'll run with any speed on it, you can still throw DOS on that thing and play these old games, and they will run perfectly fine.
That's something I would love to do, is get my hands on like a 486 DX266 and load it up with all those great old games I used to play.
Yeah, that would be, you know, just put plain old DOS on there or whatever it is you want to put on there. But most of the games back then was just DOS. That's all you had. So you can find probably all over the place those abandonware sites. And maybe you should explain abandonware for those listeners who might not know.
It's kind of a gray area. It borders between legal wares and outright piracy, though, some of this stuff. Abandonware is basically just software that has been abandoned by the company. Like you find a game that they don't support anymore and that they don't sell and they don't even have in any stores. And, you know, you want to go back and you want to play, you know, some of these ancient games, and you can't find them anywhere. The company doesn't make them available. There's no way to get a hold of them.
Or the company is just plain gone out of business. They don't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So thus the term kind of abandonware came out of that. They technically may still own copyrights to some of these games, and that's why, you know, you said it's kind of a gray area. It is. I mean, you really should, you know, I'm not condoning anyone to go out for piracy or anything like that, but I think if you do a little bit of research, you'll find that I can't remember the game I was looking for one time offhand. I went out looking for an old game, and I went to the site, and I searched all kinds of places. I finally, believe it or not, I stumbled across an official press release from the company, and God, I wish I could give some credibility and tell you the name, but I just can't think of it offhand. But I went, the company put a press release out saying that they had gone out of business and that any and all software would no longer be supported. If you wanted help, they had a forums. Somebody was hosting their forums officially for tech support and stuff like that. But it said that the files were no longer available from the company. Feel free to get copies wherever you can find them. And they gave permission. They abandoned the software, and they basically let it come into free license and into the general public.
That is awesome. I don't think I've seen too many companies go ahead and do that. I've seen a few game companies, and I'm pretty sure they are out of business now, too, that gave up the rights, like just said, go get it, take what you can find from some ROMs, you know, the software dumps of the old cartridge Nintendo games and whatnot.
Right.
I see a few of those. There's a few legal ROMs out there, too. But most of that, you know, again, is illegal, like I'm sure most of the abandonware is, too. A good place to go for most of that is the Underdogs. It's www.the-underdogs.org. They have a giant listing of games there. They rate them all, too. So they got some screenshots and little reviews for them. They got some really cool stuff there. Lots of download links for whatever games they can get away with. I'm sure they probably checked them out ahead of time, you know, to make sure that, you know, they can host the game or whatnot. And GamingDepot.com has got a bunch of them also. And it's just like the same layout idea, where they've got a little bit of review, a screenshot for a lot of them. And one thing is, though, beware of the pop-ups. Man, I went there just a little bit ago, too, looking for some stuff, and I got hammered with pop-ups.
Don't you just hate that?
Yeah. let's go on to, you know what, there's some fantastic games with no graphics out there. But just a little bit ahead of that, we had the 8-bit era on the home consoles, and we had, like, Apogee software on the computer, and that was, you know, before Doom. Think we had Wolfenstein, a game that probably a lot of people haven't played.
Yeah, you know, actually, that was That was like a breakthrough game. You know what? I tell you what, before Wolfenstein, I'll back up just a little bit. You're right. We went from no graphics at all, these text-based games, to basically like the Commodore had first started to come out. And, what was it? The VIC-20 had come out, which was kind of a hybrid computer slash console system. Actually, I think that came out quite a few years later, but TRS had computers that were out. Tandy actually had early computers out. I remember a game called Lemonade. That's going way back, too. That was a few years after the Star Wars. And it would come up with basically a graphic. I really wouldn't know how to label it, except I guess basically really is a role-playing game. It was designed, it was geared towards kids, and you would basically set up a lemonade stand, an interactive pretend lemonade stand, and they made this whole business out of it. And actually, it was somewhat educational because you learned, like, if you put too much sugar in your lemonade, people wouldn't buy it, and you have to lower the price, and sometimes somebody would move again, you get a little notice. There's no graphics, you wouldn't see somebody walk on the screen, but you get a little notice that says, warning, Billy has set up a lemonade stand 2 blocks away, your business is dropping, and what do you do? You know, you have to actually run your own business, and I mean, that's, in a strange real-world way, that is very educational. It teaches kids how to run business and how to think through and problem-solving and stuff like that. It was, you know, it sounds like a real silly concept or a real funny concept, but it was surprisingly addictive. You got in and you wanted to be successful and play the role of the big businessman. Of course, you know, here you are 10, 11, 12 years old, you know, running your own lemonade stand, and you felt like you were actually making money. Now, at the same time, we also say a lot of times that, why not go out and run your own real lemonade stand? But I grew up on a 32-acre farm. There was nobody to buy lemonade but the cows. That wasn't going to happen.
This game used ANSI graphics or something?
Yeah, it used like 3-4 color, you know, ANSI graphics. Very, very, very basic. And maybe it would repaint the screen when... like at the end of the day, or it would repaint the screen black to indicate that it was nighttime or something, and then you'd have to go to bed and wake up the next morning and repaint the screen with the sun, and there was no animation. There were some, you know, ANSI graphics, but no animation whatsoever. Another game along the same lines of that too, I remember I hope I get the name right. I think it was called Wildcat or Wildcatting or something along those lines. I probably messed it up real bad, but it was basically a similar game except more adult-themed. It was about running your own oil drilling company where you would you had X number of dollars and you would set up oil wells and you had to do research about the area you wanted to dig in, and, you know, you could safely dig this far, and you had a this percent chance of finding oil, but over here you had a higher percent, but you couldn't get as much oil, and you had to basically weigh your options and make decisions on where to expand your oil wells to, and sometimes you'd come up dry and lose money, and again, it was another running your own business kind of thing, and in today's world, that's, you know, that's very, very valuable knowledge, and to get it at such a young age on these things, on a video game is a great thing. It's really a good thing to have. And again, I used just plain old ANSI graphics, and it was just a few colors, and it would show your oil well, you know, it would show a little fake oil spurting out of the top of it when you hit oil, and it had sound, which none of the other games really had much sound. This was one of the first games that I remember that had like a little, I don't know, a celebration sound or something when you struck oil. So, you know, they games were starting to add graphics, but it still was gameplay that drove the game.
See, parents, games can be educational and fun at the same time.
Absolutely.
You know what? Just a little bit beyond Lemonade, it sounds like. See, this is another game I've never seen or heard. Did you ever play a game called ZZT and Super ZZT?
Oh, is that... That sounds right. That's not the, Kix, the clones of QIX, was it?
Could have been. I've never played those either.
I'm not sure I don't think I remember that one.
It was pretty primitive graphics. It just, you know, I mean, it would lay out like a map, and then you had like a one character-sized character that you would guide through this little land, and it would only update the screen when you'd go to like the next level or go out of the view, and it would just pop up a whole new screen, kind of like how Zelda did on the Nintendo. And it sounds a lot like that. It was kind of before we started getting our VGA graphics, and just after we had nothing but text. And that game was insanely fun. We played that a lot in just before, I guess in junior high, I think, or high school, maybe early high school, we played a lot of that ZZT because it ran on real low-end hardware, and you had this expansive, gigantic world to run around in, and, you know, you could find towns and caves, and you had monsters to fight and equipment to buy and stuff, and the graphics were minimal. I mean, they put a lot into the gameplay. There was a lot of things you could do without graphics that blew your mind. You know, I mean, like, wow, a game where you can open the door? You gotta get keys? You know?
Yeah, where you actually had an inventory to maintain and think of, too.
And then we go to something like, well, I mean, even look at Zelda. You know, that was amazing. It came, you know, 8-bit game was on the Nintendo, and this is one of the games that sucked up most of my career as a child right here, was playing Zelda.
Yeah, Zelda was groundbreaking because, again, I mean, I'm really using this word a lot, gameplay, but not only gameplay, but replayability. They defined the word replayability with Legend of Zelda. You could play for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, and then when you finally beat the whole game and got all the parts of the Triforce, everything changed and you'd start all over again if you wanted.
It was like an early Christmas present, I remember. When I first beat that, I couldn't believe it.
And then all the secrets changed and all the secret doors and dungeons and stuff like that disappeared. You know, actually, what you were describing that game too reminds me of another one, NetHack. One of those along the lines of NetHack.
Exactly, just Rogue. Like that. Yeah, just like that.
Yeah, and you know, Rogue was the one I remember playing quite a bit, and I would put it on a diskette in my pocket and carry it around with me, and anytime I'd find a computer somewhere, I'd pop it in and continue on. It was just addictive game. You pop it in the computer, you play, you could save it, leave and go play on another computer for another 15 minutes here. Anytime you found a chance, I would pop in Rogue, or I think another one was called Anguish to Ban, but the whole genre is usually referred to as NetHack. They're all clones of NetHack, which I think was the original, which, and they all used, or almost all the ones I used anyway, used the ASCII character for the smiley face as your main character.
Yeah.
And you'd move around from room to room, and they'd draw these dungeons, and you know, again, there was little to no graphics, but you would have your little smiley face ASCII character in a good location on the screen using your arrow keys to move around, and this giant letter, I don't know, D would come in for dragon, and the D would walk up to you and you'd start taking damage, and all you would do is fight back with him, and you'd win money and keys, like you said, to open up chests, and it was just an incredibly addictive game.
And it's free.
Yeah, a lot of people say, you know, Zelda could have pulled a lot from that, but what a lot of people said this about was Diablo. Diablo creating random dungeons and going along and whacking monsters over and over again, building up your inventory, making money, et cetera, basically, that's NetHack with graphics.
And you know what, the thing of it is I can play and did play and remember my friends playing. It was actually Rogue at the time. That's the one that we played forever. And Diablo, we got sick of real quick.
Now, Diablo 2, I loved. The first Diablo, yeah, it got pretty old pretty quick because the replayability factor was lost. And eventually that happened with Diablo 2 also. But, you know, Rogue and NetHack and those games went on. It does get repetitive after a while, but the monsters continuously got harder and harder, and you got better and better weapons for killing them, and somehow it kept stringing you along, and it was still fun and addictive to play.
And people are still playing it today, too. There's even a graphical update for NetHack, too, called Falcon's Eye. I haven't actually played around with it yet, but I've seen a lot of screenshots on it, and it's just, I mean, it lays right over it, gives it full graphics, and it has all the same goodness it had before, just with graphics now. I actually have the address for it. It's falconseye.sourceforge.net. It runs Windows, DOS, and Linux, and it's free, so, you know, you can go out and you can play that. I'll tell you right now, I guarantee that it's better than a good lot of the games that you've probably just paid $50 for.
You know, another thing is, they're not as nearly as prevalent as they used to be, but MUDs, multi-user dungeons, or MUSH, multi-user shared hallucination, those are still out there on the net. They've become less popular because people have become too dependent on graphics and less on gameplay, but you know, that was something else as I got older that I used to play a lot of, especially in college, because when the internet was first coming up, that was one of the most popular things. We didn't even have, you know, Netscape wasn't around, Mosaic wasn't invented yet. We had, you know, news groups, was out, email was out, and MUDs were starting to come up. People, which was basically a very specialized, customized Telnet session, you know, with rules and scripts and stuff that you played along by. But that was the greatest. That was one of the funnest and most addictive games also, with no graphics. Even though graphics were out at that age to play over the Internet, there was no graphical games you could really play over the Internet at the time. So people would play MUDs and MUSHes for hours and hours. Many a class was missed to people who were stuck or addicted in their MUD. And it was really, not only was it game and the gameplay, and, you know, most of them were role-playing Dungeons and Dragons type themes or something similar to that, but just, it was really early chat rooms, because I said it again, it was Telnet, but it was multiple users, and if you walked onto the same location, I hate to say square or into the same, without graphics to describe it, you walk into the same scripted area, the same room, for lack of a better term, you actually see each other and you interact with each other. And it was really, sometimes we would go on there, we would end up just chatting and joking, and it was, you know, a glorified chat room, you know, and you could play characters or play out an adventure or whatever, or you could just stand there and talk like it was a chat room. So that was another thing that used to take up a lot of my time.
It has the feeling of like a Dungeons and Dragons session.
Without all the damn dice rolling.
See, I was big into that for a long time, so I loved it. You know, in fact, I wish there was some way they could incorporate it into our computer games a little bit better.
Yeah, see, I think everybody was into it for a little while, or at least a lot of people that would play these type of games went through that too. But it got to a point one day where I just got so tired of rolling the dice and erasing and writing hit points and erasing hit points, and I finally said, I'll just go back to playing Rogue.
Well, see, the thing of it is that people are still playing these games, you know, and there's not much to them as far as technology goes. You know, it's all about the gameplay, so there's got to be something there. That has to be the formula, and I think everybody's forgetting that. As we get closer and closer to photorealistic games, we're seeing nothing but graphics. I don't want to jump so far ahead. I'm doing a horrible job of keeping us on track, by the way, I've noticed. But I don't want to jump so far ahead that we're talking about, like, Unreal and stuff. So, did you play a whole lot of Nintendo games and stuff, maybe? 8-bit, 16-bit stuff?
Yeah, I had the Atari 2600, but we weren't exactly, we weren't able to buy all the games, I'll word it like that. We weren't able to buy a lot of games for it, so I spent a lot of time playing Combat. And Combat, I don't care what anybody says, that game, still to this day, kicks monkey ass. You could play the tank game, you could play the airplane game, you could have 3-on-1 airplanes, you could have all kinds of different variations of this game, and you could play with a friend, and you could each have a joystick, and, God, you would have your skin of your thumb ripped from your, dangling from the bone, and you would still be addicted in playing that game.
You've got huge gamer blisters and a bunch of Band-Aids all over the place.
Yeah, they made songs about it, and they called it, like, joystick thumb. They made up a name for the disease and stuff like that. But, yeah, we used to, you know, we'd always go over to each other's house and play that game just into the ground. And you know, I think you mentioned at the opening or much earlier about Pitfall. When that came out, and that had lots of, you know, for the time, that was colorful, and it had animation and stuff like that. And you'd have to jump across the alligator's heads, and, oh, man, that was another game I spent a lot of time on, but that was more of the one-player game. You play Combat, and you could play that forever. The early driving games where you just look down on what slightly, almost, kind of, sort of resembles a car, and you drive it around, and you could play multiple players. That was great games, too. And again, graphics were there, sure, and they were developing, but that was pretty straightforward. Gameplay ran that game and drove that game. You know, I remember, actually, there was, on the computer, the first game that I remember graphics catching my eye was a game called Scorched Earth. I don't know if you remember Scorched Earth, but it was a glorified Bananas game, which Bananas was like the old basic program that shipped with DOS, where you had to throw bananas, you had to guess the trajectory that you were aiming at, and the wind, it would show you the wind rate and which way it was blowing, you had to kind of adjust and try to hit the other person. And that's what Scorched Earth was, except it added in some special effects, for lack of a better term, where you had, like, the mini nuke bomb, and if you shot that over there, it would actually blow up a larger area than it was supposed to, because it was a weapon. They had, like, a daisy cutter or a Moab or whatever were at the time, whatever they called them, where if you shot that, it would blow the ground out from underneath your opponent. He'd fall down and mess up his aim, and that had graphics to it and explosions and stuff like that. They were simplistic, but, you know, that was a good game that was still gameplay-driven, and graphics were starting to enhance the gameplay.
In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that was probably the first computer game that I played was Scorched Earth.
Scorched Earth, yeah. And, you know, that game, well, actually, I don't want to, let's see, there's two different threads I could take here. One, that game is still a big-selling game, but it's called Worms. Somebody took the exact concept, so they put these cute little worm characters in there, I guess, to try to, you know, update the graphics, and that's a fun game. If you've never played Worms, it's the exact same game with little worms with different types of guns, and you aim and try to, you know, shoot over obstacles and whatever scenery, and it's very unique. Each map is different, and different environments and graphics, and it keeps you interested, but it's basically the same game that's been around for years.
Exactly. It's not like it's not a new game. They've got, and they keep making them, too. There's like four different Worms games already. And I don't think any of them quite have the depth of Scorched Earth either. I mean, do you remember the size of the weapon list on Scorched Earth? It seemed like you had all kinds of weapons at your disposal.
Yeah.
And I remember playing that in the library at school an awful lot. And if I remember right, couldn't you have like 8 players?
I think it did support up to 8 players. And I don't know if the early versions, but I think later versions of it actually had network support, so you could play other people in the computer lab with it at school or something like that.
Oh, man, that's something I'd like to get a hold of today to play. That's pretty cool. I never saw it with network support like that, just on the hot seat version, you know, on one machine there.
Well, funny you should mention about getting your hands on a copy of it today to play, because that's the other tangent I say we could go off on here, and that fact is that game still exists.
That's right.
Game still exists, and I think you and I were talking about this last week. You went out there and checked it out, and they have a 3D version of this game out, do they not?
I don't know what it's called, though.
It's still called Scorched Earth. I think it's, I'm not sure if the address is still scorchedearth.com or it might be Scorched Earth 3D, but it's basically a 3D engine. Actually, a friend of mine had told me about it. We were talking about older games, and he's the one that pointed out to me that this still exists, and they're putting it into a 3D engine.
Oh, man.
I don't know what the delivery on that is going to be like. I'm kind of skeptical because that game was great as it is. Like I said, it was gameplay tied with graphics. So I'm wondering now, a 3D version of that, I don't know if that's really going to enhance the game anymore. I think it was already a perfect balance. And I'm thinking, you know, they're pulling this move like a lot of other companies where they think that they're going to make a 3D flashy, you know, version of it. And I think it might actually take away from it instead of enhancing it. I mean, there's been other games like Frogger was a great 2D game, you know. It was pretty simple. Don't get hit by a truck and don't jump in the water, you know. And it was top-down, pretty crummy graphics. And then they come out with 3D Frogger. Oh, what a steaming load of crap that was. And Pong, for God's sake, the first game ever. I mean, how could we not mention that in this list? Pong, and they have 3D Pong and 3D Defender, and they're like trying to put all these games over into 3D, and it just, they really haven't seen any of them pull it off successfully yet, because it's always graphics as an afterthought, trying to beef up this old game when the old games were already balanced the way they were.
They need to add a lot more to them. Once they added the flashy graphics and all this newfangled technology, they should have added some more to the gameplay. Because you're exactly right, with Frogger and Defender and Pac-Man, and even older 2D games that were on some of the 8-bit and 16-bit consoles, they're giving it a 3D makeover, and it's not necessary, and it's really hurting the games.
Yeah, you know, and to take a step further in time, let's go back to what you were saying about Zelda. Zelda was a groundbreaking game because of the gameplay, because of the replayability and stuff like that. But, you know, just the original Mario Brothers was a groundbreaking game. You know, that was an addictive game that you could play over and over and over again.
And did many, many times.
And have they tried, let's see, they don't have when they came out with, well, Mario 64. I don't know if we might be jumping too far ahead, but when Mario 64 came out, they took their time, and instead of trying to force you into the same old type of game where it's a linear environment, you had a world where you could come and go where you pleased to a certain extent, of course, within limits of how many stars you had for this door and that door, but you could come and go through many, many different styles of gameplay and many different... To me, Mario 64, even all the great games that I just mentioned, that I played when I was a kid and that you mentioned, and that I still, some games, I still say to this day that Mario 64 is the greatest video game I think I've ever played.
Wow. It is definitely one of the top 10, easily one of the top 10 games I've ever played. Definitely. I mean, and it's exactly because they focus on the gameplay and brought us the graphics. You know, this is not an old game. It's only a couple of years old now. I mean, it's very recent by today, but it's standards of what we're talking about here. And it's just the most amazing thing I've played. And have you had a chance to play Mario Sunshine?
You know, I have it, and I just have not had time to play it very much. I did buy the GameCube for Mario Sunshine because I loved Mario 64 so much, and I saw the Mario Sunshine demo in the store and played it for a few minutes. I don't know if I'm going to like it as much, but from the little bit I played, and it was made by the same person, I bought a GameCube for the sole purpose of playing that one game. So hopefully it will live up to the same expectations that I have. I hope I won't be disappointed with the game. I heard you guys talk before about how it was kind of, it had some problems and it wasn't quite the same, but I'm still hoping that, I'm still looking forward to playing that one.
Okay, then I'm not going to slam it or I'm not going to say anything bad about it because I don't want to ruin your experience. It's not that it's
it's not going to ruin my experience because everyone likes different things, too. That's what's great is like what games that I may like may be different from the games you like. So, but what happens is, there is a magic combination that creates games that everybody likes or the majority of people like, you know. There's tons of niche markets and, you know, I don't know if this may be a weird tangent. I don't know why this popped into my head, but I like role-playing games a lot. But I hate playing role-playing games on the console. And the people can email me and flame me for saying this if they want, but I just can't stand those Final Fantasy games. I really can't. I know you'll probably get mad at me for saying it, but I don't like playing role-playing games on a console system. I like playing role-playing games on the computer. Now, on the opposite side of that spectrum, I hate playing sports games or racing games on the computer. I can't stand it. I would rather play those on a console any day of the week.
This is a good topic because, you know what, I have a strong opinion about my role-playing games because the majority of the games I play are really role-playing games. I've just always been something I've been really into for some reason, and I have just the opposite feeling. I cannot stand to play a role-playing game on a computer, and if I'm not sitting on the bed or, you know, laying in a comfortable chair or on the couch or whatever, playing in front of the TV, it almost doesn't have the same feeling, and to tell you the truth, I think it's more the games themselves than it is, you know, the location of where I am or what I'm doing or the feel for the controller over the keyboard or the mouse. I'm not a big fan of the Final Fantasy series, though. I 1 through 6 were fantastic games, but I think when they hit 7 was like a turning point because it still had a great story, and I was really into it, and it was bringing us 3D graphics into a role-playing game, which was, you know, phenomenal. It was just like, oh my god, you know, this is what we've been waiting for. And since then, I think things have really taken a turn for the worse. Now we've got all graphics and no gameplay in these games. It's almost like an interactive movie where you occasionally have to push a button to progress the story along in case you weren't reading fast enough. There's no play.
I do agree with you on that. I did like the first few Final Fantasies for the console, but as a general rule now, as in modern day, you know, I have Xbox, I have the GameCube, like I said. I haven't found a role-playing game for either one of those that looked like I wanted to drop 50 bones on it. You know, it just doesn't look like it wanted to pull me in. And this also may be, again, a difference in the age that I came up playing computers. I came up, my most favorite games on computers as a series or as time-consuming were the old. They were made by TSR. They were the only ones that were licensed for, it was SSI. They were the only ones that were licensed to make TSR games, which is the people that, own the rights or made Dungeons and Dragons. And they had what are now referred to as the gold box games. They came in a gold box. They were like I think even the first one might have only been on one diskette, but they were like a couple diskettes big you would install, and they had all the official Dungeons & Dragons rules in there, and this was PC game. You didn't get them anywhere else. So it might be a fact that I started playing on the computer and kind of got used to it and kind of got, I guess, spoiled, for lack of a better word, to playing that style of game. But you had more control. You could hit your eye to get your inventory up, and you can move your weapons around and choose this and analyze stuff on screen. And I just found that when you try to do that with, you know, a couple buttons on the controller, it was just always clunky. If it was designed properly, then yeah, it could be really good stuff. But I never found anything on the consoles that was as good. Now, I found some that I liked. Like I said, I liked some of the Final Fantasy. I loved Legend of Zelda. I don't know if that's really... I'd like to hear what you define role-playing as, or people in general, because to me, role-playing is like I said, the Dungeons & Dragons games where you make your own character from the ground up. You play the part of whoever you want to play. And in the Final Fantasy games, I don't want to be fucking Red Nine. I don't want to be Cloud. I don't want to be whatever these people. I don't want to be them. I want to be Stank Dog and some Red Nine ass. You know? So I guess you could define them as role-playing because you are playing a role of a character. But true role-playing to me means you get to make up a character and play the role that you want to play.
Based off of exactly whatever you want. I'm full agreement with that. It does take me a little bit to get into some of the Final Fantasy. Well, in fact, all of them except for the first one, you play the role of other characters, which is a little bit unsettling. And I see what you're saying. Most of these console games, you're right, you do have to play the role of the character that they want to put you through the story as, which does kind of suck.
It makes it feel very linear, even if it's not. They usually are very linear, another thing I don't like about them. But when you're forced to play a certain character, you feel like the line is already drawn, your path is already determined, and I'm just going through the motions of going, you know, making it.
Yeah, you're right. That's true for the most part. You do get that feeling, and, you know, it does feel very linear, more so than it would on the computer even, I guess, unless you can make your own character. I played... What is that? Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 and Icewind Dale. What's the other one? Planescape Torment. All those were fantastic computer role-playing games, but they were the only ones that ever got me into playing a role-playing game on a computer. I cannot stand playing any of those other games for some reason. It just doesn't feel right in this. It seemed to me that my biggest complaint, I guess, was the story of them. Just was pretty thin. The console RPGs generally come from Japan. And it seems to me that the computer RPGs generally come from America. And I don't know if it's a difference in their storytelling or what, but I cannot get that into a computer role-playing game.
Yeah, you know, I that is actually a good point. I never really thought about the differences between who made them and what country made them. There probably is a difference. I'm sure there's a difference. But, you know, you've got me one up. I know how much I love role-playing games and how addictive I can get and how addictive they are to me and how much I can get into them. I have intentionally, it's out of pure willpower, I have purposely not played Baldur's Gate. I have purposely not played Icewind Dale and Baldur's Gate. I have purposely not played any of those games because I know that if I install it, I'll be skipping work, I'll be up all night not sleeping. So I expect that I would like those too, but the other thing you said about the game, about the story being pretty thin, yeah, that is a shame, and that is a bad trend that's happened with the PC role-playing games, where, you know, I like the whole genre with the knights and dragons and that whole thing, but, you know, it gets old after a while. Every game, it seems like, Kill the Foozle? That was Foozle was a term they used to use when the games got repetitive. It was always called a Kill the Foozle game or just a Foozle game. Your job was to, you played the role of a warrior or wizard or whatever, and there was an evil wizard or warrior, and that was pretty much the plot. And you just go through the stages and the steps, killing everything along the way until you kill the big bad guy at the end. And it gets pretty repetitive, and there's not a whole lot of originality in it. And I will admit that the Final Fantasy stuff had some originality in some of the storylines, and not just Final Fantasy, but a lot of the Japanese games, like you said before.
My big thing with them, I think, is that they invoke some kind of emotion in me. That's really, I think, what it does it for me. the computer role-playing games, I never felt that way. I never felt at all. Playing the console games, it must just be their method of storytelling, I guess, because, I mean, I get involved with the characters. Even though I didn't make them and they're not my own, it's like I get so wrapped. It's like watching a soap opera or something for long enough. It's crazy.
And I think the PC games and the deeper TSR-type role-playing games are more reward-driven than story-driven. Your goal was killing these monsters to get the next cool sword or whatever like that instead of advancing the story. But again, that's, in my personal opinion, that's kind of the knock against the Final Fantasy or those type games is, again, I feel that I'm just being pulled along the line. You like it because it gets you immersed, and I can see that, but it just never quite worked for me personally. I didn't feel like I was immersed. I feel like I was being pulled along.
See, which that's what keeps us hooked on Diablo. So I gotta get this sword. I've gotta find one more of this type of gem. You know, and that makes for some great addictive gameplay.
Yeah, it's absolutely, that's absolutely reward driven and addictive, and that's kind of what became the downfall of the game. You know, people were duping items and collecting tons and tons of the items, and it got to the point where everything had been seen, everything had been gotten, and the gameplay was repetitive and without the rewards. When the rewards will run out of a reward-driven game, you have no more game.
And it does end pretty quick because it gets tired clicking on that mouse to kill them same stupid monsters you've been waiting through all day.
Now, you got to have that combination, like, again, back to Legend of Zelda, you have the combination where you do have an ultimate story of gathering the parts of the Triforce, but as you went along, you would get new weapons, you'd get the swords you could shoot, and you could get all these new bigger shields and all kinds of cool stuff, so you had rewards to drive you along the way, as well as the story to drive you along the way. So you got to have, again, balance and gameplay. That's really the key to a good, successful, groundbreaking game.
Truer words were never spoken.
Man, we got kind of deep on this, didn't we?
Yeah. And you know what? We skipped over a lot of stuff, too, though.
Man.
Because I wanted to talk some more about the original, like the computer games, so just a little bit before we get so far up into the current games, though. Like, I don't know if you played any of the old Apogee computer games, like Solar Winds and Jill the Jungle.
Oh, I loved those games. There was one, I think they actually had to change the name of it, Alien Carnage, I think it was called. It was called Halloween Harry. It was an Apogee game, and it was like the guy with the jetpack and the flamethrower. Oh, that was such a fun game. It was such a great game. It was just a side-scrolling shooter.
And they were golden. They were great. I remember playing Jill the Jungle, the demo, over and over and over, and Solar Winds, and oh, Ode, I think one of his favorite games of all time was a game called Crystal Caves. And these were just, you know, simple 2D side-scrollers that evolved into what we've got, like, you know, Sonic. Sonic the Hedgehog came out. And then we've got, look at Sonic Adventure, all the new ones. And I don't know if you've played any of the recent iterations of these games, but these 2D games they're taking and making 3D, I can't stand the new Sonic games. I don't like the Crash Bandicoot style of game. I don't like the Ratchet and Clank. It just doesn't feel right. It feels like it needs to be 2D is what it feels like.
Right, yeah, you know, and again, that kind of goes back to the Mario 2D to 3D transition, but it's not simply putting it in 3D just because everything else is 3D. You have to design and think that way from the ground up. Otherwise, it's exactly what you feel. You feel like you should be playing a two-dimensional game instead of a three-dimensional game. Is it Shimomura? The guy who wrote Nintendo 64, he got it. He understood it, and he made it work. And they were one of the few people that could deliver on a 3D game. I have to admit, that the first, Tomb Raider, you know, was a good 3D game. It felt right. It felt natural. Prince of Persia, you know, that one felt pretty good. Those were both computer games. I don't know if were those ported over to consoles?
Yeah, a lot of those were. I remember Prince of Persia was for sure. What was the other one you said? For some reason I didn't hear you.
Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
Oh, yeah, they're on consoles, yeah.
And that's another thing, too, is no matter what. Like I said, I like playing role-playing games on computer, and you prefer them on console. Regardless of which I prefer them on in general, I still have a rule that I always tell people, whatever it's developed on first is going to be the best version of the game. If the game is developed on the PC and comes out on the PC first, it's going to play best on the PC because everything else is just a port. It's just a recompiled version forced into a different controller, for example. So if you have a game, like let's take Diablo, for example. Huge game on the computer. Absolutely groundbreaking, humongously popular game on the computer. Well, okay, well, let's try to turn a few more bucks by porting this over to the console game. And the console game bombed. It bombed. I mean, actually, they probably made money or broke even, but it wasn't critically acclaimed because the gameplay wasn't the same. People couldn't get on and get the same feeling because it wasn't designed and made for the consoles. And conversely, racing games and sports games, those are generally developed for consoles. They realize that, well, let's take, I don't know, baseball game. It's pretty straightforward. You got your joystick. You can move the bat around, a button to swing, a button to bunt. You have base dealing buttons. That's designed for buttons and joystick. You put that on the PC, and I hate those games because I don't want to remember F4 plus Q, shift double Z to steal, and I don't want to remember all those keyboard combinations. So whatever it was designed for and originally written on, that's the way to play the game. That's the way the game was intended to be played.
I like that a lot. I never thought of that before, and you're completely right, because I've seen a lot of the console games ported to the computer. The one that really sticks out in my mind for some reason, I don't know why, I know there's better games to use an example, but Virtua Tennis. I remember you fire this game up, and it tells you to press the start button. I'm looking around on my keyboard, and of course there's no start button there, right? I mean, they just get lazy at it, you know? I mean, they don't even try to port it over correctly and fix up all the keys and stuff. And you said, you know, Blizzard ported Diablo, and, well, they probably didn't do the port themselves, but it's their property.
Yeah, they probably outsourced it to someone, but point being, it was originally developed. And take another one, like Halo. Halo was developed for the Xbox and still hasn't come out for PC, if it will ever come out. I think they supposedly announced it and then they push it back and announced it and push it back. It's still, I still would be surprised if it outplays the console version because that's what it was designed for.
Halo's an interesting one because originally it was designed for the PC, though.
Right, well, 3D shooters kind of emerged on the PC. That is true. That might be an interesting case to try out, see if the gameplay is as good for the computer.
And Halo itself actually was supposed to be a PC game. I don't know if you knew that or not, but originally it was slated for PC release, and Microsoft snatched up Bungie.
Exactly. They pushed it back. Bungie had pushed it back for a while, and they had the whole vaporware joke about them. And then Microsoft brought it up, and Microsoft was pushing to release it on PC. And then somebody probably saw, hey, we got Xbox that we wanted to do. Let's hold it a little bit longer and release it for the Xbox. And, yeah, that game was in limbo for a long time before it finally came out.
Well, I can't wait to see what happens. They say they're going to have it out by the end of the year. We'll see if it makes it back to the PC in decent enough shape. But, I mean, what you were saying about the first-person shooters, you're right. I mean, it started with, like, there was even one before Wolfenstein. I can't think of the name of it. Do you remember what I'm talking about? I think it was made by the same guys.
Hey, I'm trying to think before. I think Wolfenstein was actually the first.
They had one called, oh, man, there was something.
There was one called Blake Stein.
Blake Stone.
Came out from Apogee afterwards. Let's see. There was what was the one with the Oriental theme to it that came out afterwards? I'm pretty sure Wolfenstein was, gosh, I really don't remember. That was the first one that really broke through. That one, I used to remember seeing that in the arcade by my college, actually, when that came out. They were, you know, kids were playing arcade games, and they were trying to break in with a computer game, and you would put the little 3D mask over your head, one of those very early attempts at doing a 3D goggles, and you put it over your head and play the game, and they had a TV screen mirroring it so people could stand back and watch, and you'd be standing there with the gun in your hand shooting in this 3D helmet. And that was one of the first ones I remember, and it was, you know, it tried to break through, and it did break through and create a genre. It seems like there was another one along the times that was similar, but I think that's the one that really did it.
Yeah, you're right. There was one before. I'm sure I remember seeing something before, but it just didn't, I don't think it was as good. And I remember Wolfenstein, I mean, it just floored everybody. And they did it again with Doom.
Yeah, well, you know, Doom was like, it was the same game, but they really mastered it and made it more, you know, Doom was pretty much, Wolfenstein was pretty much shoot straight ahead. There was no up and down. It was mostly just left and right. You were on a parallel plane with the ground. There was no fancy crouching and jumps and stuff like that. Doom came in and you could shoot up, you could shoot down, you had, you know, a lot more versatility and control and gameplay, which is the theme of the whole show tonight, to your character.
Improved graphics, the controllers were much better, and the big thing was multiplayer.
Yeah, and you know that when multiplayer games came out in general, you know, the net, at first they were just networked games because, again, the internet, you know, a lot of people, it's kind of funny that a lot of people don't know a time when the internet didn't exist. You know, I remember when they didn't have internet, when we had a game like, I think Halloween Harry was the one we played, Scorched Earth came out with a network version. We would play network games, and to us, that was incredibly cool. We would play Doom. When Doom came out, we would get, I think it would only support 4 or 8 players, Doom, when it first came out.
Yeah.
And we would go in and we'd set up a whole lab and we would just, oh, it was the greatest gaming ever to go in there and play that because it was something you'd never been able to play games with other people before in head-to-head competition and skill and, you know, it changed the world of gaming. It really did.
Yes, it did. I think it was 4 players too. I remember we used to play that in class, trying to sit there, me and my buddies, and in fact, Wolf was one of the ones who we were all in the advanced computer class together and two other friends of ours, and we would sit there trying to play Doom and hide it from the teacher who's up in the front, obviously can't see the monitors, and there we are every so often releasing a damn it.
Trying not to go, oh, damn it.
We've got these huge smiles that we're trying to, you know, keep locked down so he didn't know, and he always knew it because we start, you know, you start sweating and you don't blink, and it was just, I mean, that game was bringing down corporate networks, sucking up so much bandwidth, no work was getting done. It was amazing.
Hey, they actually released products that would go out and search for the Doom EXEs and stuff like that to try to clean it off their networks because people were sneak playing it at work and sneaking it on using up the network bandwidth. They actually started to release applications. People paid money for a piece of software that would go out and delete installations of Doom that it found on their network.
That's how you know your game has made it big. My God.
Anytime they try to fight back to keep your game or keep whatever you're doing from being done, then you've definitely hit something big.
We go from Doom to Quake. I don't know, have you played a whole lot of Quake, but it's something I could never get into. It almost seems to me that they had the formula with Doom, the 2.5D, the sicko weird graphics, and the multiplayer was all fresh and new at the time. Quake 1 came out, and I played that for just a little bit. I went through, I beat it. Multiplayer I was never into, and it's still huge on the internet, though. I mean, a lot of people still play it. But it almost seemed like, you know, more of the same.
Well, the difference with Quake, really, that set it apart.
It's not 3D. Right,
well, yeah, as a science nerd, like, I love the physics aspect of it. I mean, when it first came out, I would only use the grenade launcher. I thought that was incredible because I could play angles. See, I'm a strategic player in 3D games. I listen for sounds. I play hot zones where I know people are going to come past. I watch people's habits. And I would know or hear somebody, and I would just aim, get the angle right, the physics right, and pop a grenade through the window, and it would fall down into the room and kill people. And if I missed or something, I could, you know, if it bounced into the lava or something like that, you aim a little bit higher, and you'd adjust your bounce because the physics would carry it the right way. And that was one of the things about that game that I liked. That was just the simple engine. The game was, you know, the plot was pretty much the same old shoot 'em up. But the engine was just phenomenal. The multiplayer aspect was phenomenal. And the third thing that really, really sold that game was it was the one that set the standard for graphics. They were the ones that would make guns with the spirals coming out. You could see the individual bullets, and you could see the smoke effects and stuff. It took advantage of the video cards that were starting to come out. So that one, you know, that was one of the ones where you could debate one way or the other. I think they did a good job of balancing gameplay with graphics. I think they did a good job. The only problem I had with it was really without the multiplayer, the single player was pretty much, you know, you win it, you're done, and you move on. It was very repetitive, and I didn't find a whole lot of replayability in the game.
That's probably what my problem was, is because I mainly played it In fact, I think the honest to God, the, I really played the alpha version that wasn't even finished. I remember getting all the way to the end, and the last boss guy, the last level, was not even there. And that was the extent of it at the when it first had come out that I played it, and I think that's why it never took off for me. I got some friends that still play it to this day. One of them runs his own Quake server just to play the damn thing with whoever hops on it. And so I know they must have done it right. It just never stuck with me, but it still is kind of... very slight evolution, it seemed to me, anyway, from Doom. The graphics were great. It was nice to see. The first time I saw that on a 3D accelerator card was over at Wolf's house on, like, a Voodoo 1.
Exactly. Same with me, that Voodoo 1, and it just blew my mind.
I was floored. I was like, you know, this is it. The holy grail of gaming. It does not get any better than this.
Yep. Those Voodoo cards had just come out, and this was... they were a separate card. They were not an accelerator card like we have now. It was a separate accelerator card that plugged into, patched through your existing video card. And it just intercepted the extra calls, the extra functions, and did all those functions on the accelerator card and took the load off of your normal video card. And, yeah, they had functions to, you know, like explosions and the fire and smoke effects and stuff like that. And, yeah, that I used to have friends that were real hardcore gamers, and they went out and bought this card, and, you know, I'm like, yeah, you're kind of dumb, man, dude. You spent $150 on a video card when I can get a video card for $10, you know. But then they showed me Quake, and I went out 2 days later and bought the Voodoo card. I was amazed by it.
It was amazing, and here I am with a GeForce 3 I paid $350 for now just to keep up with these games. It's just getting kind of ridiculous. And that we've gone through a whole different genres, and we've gone through a lot of different games themselves. And we were talking about this earlier, which we should probably bring up just to add it in here, Panzer Dragoon. This is going to kind of tie into all the stuff that we were just talking about, too. The original Panzer Dragoon was just amazing. I loved that damn game. You still have it hooked up, correct?
I absolutely do, and I don't, you know, I still have the Sega Saturn because I have Panzer Dragoon and Panzer Dragoon's Way, 1 and 2, because they're just, I can't even put my finger about what it is about them that's addictive. A, I like the whole fantasy genre, and the idea of flying on the back of the dragon is just a great concept. It's a flight simulator that's not the same old flight simulator, you know? B, the gameplay ability and the controls of the game and shooting the stuff down and holding the button for different attacks and the control over the dragon that you have, and it's just gameplay on that is phenomenal. And the message that's in that, if I may, to me is... That's the Sega Saturn. They've got the Dreamcast has come out since then. They haven't had any new hardware, but we've got the PlayStation 2 and Xbox that have come out. That's like three generations old, that hardware and that software. It's still playable. It's still fun. And I find it an interesting parallel that it's kind of like we talk about a lot on RFA about how... and we even said it earlier today, how cool it would be to have an old 486 to play your games on, to play these old DOS games and stuff like that on. This old hardware, old PCs, you can play these games on the old PCs. You can run Linux operating system on an older machine, you know, and it still runs good, it still runs fine. And, it, you know, even as much as you hate to say it, even old Windows 3.1 or Windows 9X or whatever, you can put on an old 486 and just play old games. Or if you have, like, a dedicated app, maybe you want to just keep, an Internet browser open separate. You don't want to install Internet Explorer on your game machine because it'll fuck everything up or something. You want to keep it separate. So you can install it on a separate older machine. They still have a purpose. And I find it an interesting parallel into the console world because my Sega Saturn still has a purpose, playing these old games. You can go to swap meets. You can go to eBay and find games that are for sale. You can go out to garage sales, tons of places, and find games for a few bucks that are incredibly fun. There were so many games that came out along that time on console that you probably missed a lot of good games that you can get for cheap now. And, you know, you can get 10 great games that are still fun with good graphics for that $150 game that comes out for Xbox that you play for a day or two, and then you hate it and return it, you know?
Which brings us to Panzer Dragoon Orta, which is, I don't know if you remember, we were talking about this earlier, exactly this conversation here, where Panzer Dragoon Orta is just more of the same, with a graphic upgrade.
And if anything, it's almost less of the same. I only played the demo of it. I was looking forward to the game because I loved the original so much. And I played the little demo of it for a few minutes, and it was, I felt like I was playing the original. I didn't really feel much of a difference in it. And there was nothing, they were updated graphics, but they were nothing fantastic. There were nothing groundbreaking graphics about it. There were newer graphics, sure, but there was nothing, anything different about the game at all. So that's not necessarily bad, you know, but 50 bones for that game, when I can get it for $3 at a garage sale somewhere, That's a big difference. So I don't want to shell out that kind of money. We don't all make those kind of big bucks, so shell it out like that. So when the game is still the same on the old console, why bother?
Exactly. You don't have to shell out all that money for these games, and they're the exact same. We've got tons of games that are just carbon copies with a new skin over them that were not any better than they were before, or in some cases, not as good as it was before. One of the cool things about Panzer Dragoon Orta, by the way, is that the original Panzer Dragoon is on it also. Once you beat it, you can unlock the original Panzer Dragoon. And that's more motivation to play the new one than it is to play the new one by itself just for the experience. It's just to get to the old one.
Is it new graphics of the older game, or is it the actual older game ported over?
It's the actual older game ported over.
So it's the same graphics as you would be playing on the Sega Saturn.
Yes, yeah.
And I did not know that was on there, but yeah, that is kind of an interesting thing. I wish they would do stuff like that more often. Like, I think it was the new Zelda game for Nintendo 64. I think on that CD it came with the, what was the previous Zelda? I forget the name of it. Comes on the game. It comes on, you get an extra CD with the Nintendo 64 Zelda game.
Yeah, the Ocarina of Time and the
Master. Yeah, that's what it was. The Time, yeah, the Ocarina, whatever you pronounce it, of Time.
Whatever.
That's on the new Zelda game, and I think that's kind of cool. You actually feel like you're getting something, because, again, that first Zelda game, well, not first, but that last Zelda game before this one, that one was actually a pretty cool game, too, and the graphics aren't that dated on that at all, either.
Yeah, and you know what? They actually redid them just a little bit. I think they made them a little bit sharper for the cube. So it is improved just a little bit, but I don't think they did anything major to it.
Now that's a great concept. Now, if they would have marketed Panzer Dragoon Orta on the box to say, includes the original first two Panzer Dragoon, and you feel like you're buying three games for the price of one, if they would have marketed that way, I think it might have been a lot more successful.
Probably. I think it's only got the first one on it, but yeah, you're totally right. You know, if they would have made that more well known, the only reason I know about it is because I was reading it about in some magazine somewhere, some website somewhere. But all these games that we've been talking about, up until maybe the Sega Saturn and PlayStation time, you can get them to play on your computer. You were talking about having, a dedicated gaming box. I would love to have a machine that's somewhat decently powered. I mean, it doesn't have to be too burly, but for some of the newer games, like to emulate the Nintendo 64 games and some of the PlayStation games, you've got to have some pretty high-end hardware. But I would love to have a machine loaded with ROMs hooked up to my TV where, I just grabbed my little Sidewinder controller and sat down and played it. And you can. I don't know if a whole lot of people know about this. I mean, I know it's big, but I know a lot of people never heard of it. The emulation aspect of it. You can play old arcade games and old console games on your computer. I don't know how much of this you've ever done, but I've played quite a bit of it, and while it is illegal to own the ROM, which is just the software, it's like one file, which is just a dump of the hardware from your old game. They're pretty small, too, believe it or not. They're not entirely legal unless you own the cart itself, which, of course, most people don't hang on to a lot of the cartridges they had before for older games and stuff, or some of them got damaged or whatever, but you know what you gotta do. But there's emulators for these that run just as good and better than some of the systems. You can save anywhere. They save states of your game. So some of those old games where you couldn't, save your game at certain parts and you had to only go to like a save point, you can save it anywhere you want. They've got different filters for the graphics and stuff. Have you ever get into this at all?
Yeah, actually, if there's a little bit more history than that, for MAME anyway, which is Multi-Arcade Machine Emulator. The ROMs you're referring to, well, the particular ones you're referring to a few seconds ago were the Nintendo 64, you said. Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely right. It does that. But originally, what made MAME popular anyway was the physical hardware ROMs from arcade machines, Pac-Man, and those old school games. Those are very, very tiny, and that's what MAME was really developed for. MAME will let you take those ROMs, and again, to the legal aspect, you have to own the arcade machine. You have to own a lot of what happens with the stand-up upright machines from the arcades is they'll burn up sometimes, and you've ruined or lost your board. Well, if you have a backup of that ROM and you have an EEPROM burner, you can just burn that back, well, for lack of a better word, now, I shouldn't say burn, reprogram it, that ROM image back on there, and you can get that machine working again. So there's valid reasons, that's where it came up from, but the individual ROM itself, yes, you can put it on this emulator and test it and see if that's what you want. You can take a Pac-Man board, for example. One of the things that was very popular is in Japan and some other countries, they made different versions of Pac-Man. They made speeded up versions. They made extra maps because, you know, people would play Pac-Man for hours with the same maps they had memorized. They made different maps and different graphics and characters. So you could take your Pac-Man intentionally, erase or reprogram the ROM, and put on a new version so you have something different to play. So all these ROMs were stored up and saved, and MAME came about where it would load those ROMs and emulate the environment for you so you could play those on the PC. So all the old school games, and then what I call the medium school games, which is like some of the, I don't know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Street Fighter and things around that age 10 years ago, those started to come out from the arcade machines, and then the Nintendo 64 and PlayStation and those types started to come out too. So now you've got literally thousands upon thousands upon thousands of games that you can play through this simple emulator. And that's phenomenal. That's a phenomenal concept and a phenomenal idea. And if you ever go to an arcade nowadays, sometimes you'll stumble across a machine where it'll be like a generic title. It'll be like Pick 10 or 50 Top Games, and you actually can scroll through a menu of all these different ROMs, and the thing either burns it on demand and lets you run it, or it's running that MAME or some other similar emulator inside of the arcade machine, and you just pick which game you want to do. So, you know, it's taken off phenomenally. It's more of an arcade-driven thing, but yeah, as it became popular for home use, you can run it. I think there's Linux and Windows versions of it that you can play these in the comfort of your own home.
It's great because it allows all these old games to live on, too. You can't always go down to the arcade, and even if you do, chances of you finding a Pac-Man or a Frogger or a Donkey Kong down at some of today's arcades, it's not going to happen. I've looked. I've tried to find stuff like this. I think I got lucky a couple weeks ago and found a Centipede machine somewhere. Actually, that was down at the theater. I was really happy about that because I like playing these old games that were a lot of fun.
So, but see, now Centipede comes out the way we were talking about earlier. You have to have the trackball to play Centipede.
Yeah.
Now, that's what it was developed for. It was written for that. If you play Centipede with a joystick, it's not the same.
You're right. You're totally right. You're right. It doesn't feel anything like the same. But, you know, the point of it is if you're hard up enough to play that game, you know, it's so nice, the fact that you can go grab some free software. The emulators itself are totally legal. Right, you grab the software, and then it just takes a little while to go searching around the internet to go find some ROMs. And I mean, they're everywhere. I feel I'm kind of torn on the issue too, because on the one hand, I think it's a good thing. I like having them. I like saying, you know, oh, I've got tons of Nintendo games. If I feel like playing a round of Super Mario, I can do that real quick. If I feel like switching to a different console, I mean, you can. I mean, they've got Apple II emulators for this. They got Amiga emulators. They've got all the games that run on these things. But on the other side of that, they're pushing it too far too fast. I mean, we had PlayStation emulators while the PlayStation was, you know, still going strong. We had Nintendo 64 emulators while the Nintendo 64 was fairly new still. I mean, maybe a year old. And, you know, you were able to pirate these games. So, I mean, there's always that end of it, too. But the cool thing is that, you know, these games that we're talking about, you guys can go back, you know, go dig around on the Underdogs or, Oh, what were those other ones? Gaming Depot or FreeOldies.com. Dig around and look up some of those old computer games. Go find some emulation sites somewhere. Go looking through their ROMs. Find out what they've got and see if, you know, there's something that doesn't, you know, not doesn't have to have the greatest graphics. Obviously not if they're really old. And give it a shot. You know, you might be surprised that some of these games are just mind-blowing that you just, you know, overlooked. Seems to me that today's, you know, like the younger generation, the new generation of gamers aren't getting the full experience. Maybe they're even getting shortchanged by a lot of the flash out there. I mean, we're not seeing the greatest games in the world. We're seeing the prettiest games in the world, though.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But yeah, you got to have some appreciation for the history of the games and the importance of gameplay. Go back and play, you know, Mario 64. Go back and play Legend of Zelda. Go back and play these games that have you know, set the standards. Go. You can look at pretty much any game site on the web, and you'll see the big titles and you'll say to yourself, why in the world was that popular? That doesn't even look. And try it, and you'll find out why. You'll find out how cool these older games are, still are to this day. And then you'll suddenly appreciate, man, why didn't so and so? Why didn't they do this? You know, play Duke Nukem 3D. You know, play Duke Nukem 3D multiplayer and how funny it is and how many weird and silly things that they put into the game, and then say to yourself, why didn't they put this in this game? You know, why didn't they do this like that? You know, and you'll get a more of appreciation of when the game is done right versus when a game is done wrong and when a game is done sloppy. You know, there's definitely a lot that can be learned from the older games, and that is focus on gameplay first. Make sure the gameplay is enhanced and balanced with the graphics, and that neither one overrides the other.
Words of wisdom. I think that's it. I hope you enjoyed. Go out and play some old games.